Hi, I'm Mark Sheldon, and this is The Road to Health, a podcast presented by Blue Cross and Blue Shield of Rhode Island. We're continuing our celebration of 20 years of the Blue Angel Community Health Grant with an organization that was a grantee way back in 2002 and 2003, Youth in Action. Youth in Action is a Providence-based organization working to create opportunities for youth to become agents of change through transformative youth leadership. I visited them in their headquarters, a converted home that feels like part clubhouse, part coffee house, and part think tank. The space is bustling with life and creativity and is surrounded with the noises that you'd associate with Broad Street at 4 o'clock
okay,
in the afternoon.
I'm going to move on to the, We got motorcycles outside.
And all of the kinetic energy you associate with a room full of engaged teenagers. That's the sound of me managing to knock over an energy drink mid-recording. But the real stars of the show are the youth. They are as happy and as powerful and as proud as you'd want one of your own kids to be. I got to meet some of the Youth in Action's team leaders.
I'm Christy.
I'm Ramat. I'm the development Coco.
I'm Nairo, and I'm the co-coordinator for Youth in Action.
Hi, my name is Teresa, and I'm the Youth in Action's youth board chair.
As well as one of the grown-ups they partner with.
Hello, I'm Elian Rivera. I use the pronouns he, him, ellos, and I am the executive director here at Youth in Action.
And I was immediately welcomed and swept up into their passion for everything Youth in Action does to mold them not just into the leaders of tomorrow, but empower them to take charge of their environment today.
So we're marking 20 years of Blue Angel Community Health Program. Elliot, I think you're going to answer this for me. Your organization was one of our first grantees way back in 2002 and 2003. Can you share more about what you were working on then?
Yeah. So one of the things that's always been big here at Youth in Action is health in whatever way health comes up, whether it's mental health, physical health, or sexual health. And back when this program started and we were initially funded, the youth were working on a program called the Yeah Street Team and working on different opportunities to share sexual health and personal health with each other with a peer-to-peer approach. And what was really cool about the Yeah Street Team, and Yeah stood for Youth Educating About Health, is they would literally get out on the street with their backpacks and then do peer-to-peer education on the street, give out resources in regards to sexual health and other personal health matters, and educate each other. So, and that's manifested in so many different ways today. Even though the Yeah Street Team doesn't exist in the same way that it was 20 years ago, it's lent itself to how youth talk about health, again, as mental health, social emotional health, and how we decide programming and how we work with each other today.
Well, 20 years is a long time, right? So how have your programs continue to evolve? What's changed and what stayed the same?
So I think that the core of what it is that we do here at Youth in Action hasn't changed. It's just how we do it. We still create the spaces for young people to co-create with the adults, a space where they can feel safe enough to be themselves, bring their whole selves. And from there, that's where they define the changes they want to see in themselves and in others to create those interpersonal and community level progressive changes, which lead to all the different action groups and programming that we have today.
I feel like it hasn't changed that much in the sense of like, it's still focused on helping youth and like the things that we need. So we have like immersion programming and core programming where younger youth come in and like they learn about their core identities. So things like intersectionality, race. Then they move on to immersion where they basically immerse themselves into their community through, you know, the action groups. Right now, one of the action groups is podcasting and we also have fashion. And so Youth in Action has always been like surely change. And so I feel like based on what I heard 20 years ago until now, we're still doing that surely change where we like, we share amongst ourselves, we learn leaderships, and then we make change in our communities.
I think another really cool highlight too is that all of our programming is either fully facilitated or co-facilitated by the youth. So when we talk about the initial programming, like the core and immersion, the two facilitators are right here. Chrissy and Irel are the facilitators who are looking at core programming and how we do it. So love to hear what y'all think about core and the impact of the work that y'all do.
We try to make it as fun as we possibly can as the Cocos. But if the youth don't want to engage, then we can't force them. So it all depends.
Another program that we forgot about is the collective stage, mm-hmm. which is also, it may not be like a set every week program, but it is like another stage of Youth in Action that we do have. And you can be put into collective right after first year, right? And it's basically an opportunity to expand your leadership. So that can come in different ways. Like the COCOs are in their collective stage as co-coordinators. Like there's different roles. There's their programming COCOs, the development COCOs, admin COCOs, and most importantly, the youth board chair.
And that's a powerful thing, right? That's something that has been with us since we were founded, where youth are on the board of directors and not just from a tokenized, you're like, oh, you sit here, thanks. Does that work for you? Good. No, but they have full voting power. Their opinions matter. And our bylaws state that there has to be two chairs, an adult and an active youth participant. So at the highest level of power, they're making decisions, which help us, especially when we're in a place right now where we're looking at strategic planning and thinking about what our next 3 to 5 years are. Having youth in the mix is transformative to ensuring that we're keeping our intergenerational process, but always with a youth-led lens.
When Teresa mentioned like our collective part of like programming and all that, I think Youth in Action uses that as a great way to remind the youth and just, I guess, reinforce them that they are leaders, and like, you know, making them leaders in a space that they're comfortable in is a great way for you to start feeling comfortable in like a position of leadership, so that when they grow up and they start their own business or whatever, they know how to handle power. They know how to stand in like what they believe in and their morals and whatever, without feeling like, no, I'm young, I'm this, like I'm not allowed to think this way.
And I think the last thing I want to add too is when I'm thinking about the collective level programming, the programming that has stepped up to a place where youth are leading in an external, really facing progressive change way, is though the YAT team doesn't exist anymore, that rooted in health and personal growth is still there. Some of the programs that are happening at the collective level, we have a program modeled after the really successful program from the Rhode Island Coalition Against Domestic Violence called 10 Men, where you have the first year of 10 young men working with young male-identified folks on fighting intimate partner violence and advocating and educating, which is a whole other form of positive health. We have Youth in Action houses the state's Youth Action Board to End Youth Homelessness, where they're working with the Coalition for the Homeless and other partners throughout the state and advocating for resources in the moment. They just distributed $3.5 million to end youth homelessness, and they're working on strategies and policy to eradicate it by 2030. Where they're working in coalitions for education equity through our school's PVD and the Providence Alliance for Safer School Student Safety, where they're looking at different policies and working with policymakers in the district on how to have education equity for campaigns such as ethnic studies and more ethnic studies in their curriculum as a standard and credit bearing. And those are all indicators, social indicators for positive health. One other cool thing is one of our alumni, Nwando, moved to or is working in Woonsocket and started a coalition called the Watch Coalition, which is fighting for health equity with a youth-led lens. So our alumni are out there progressing the work that they were doing back in the day, and now if they're not leading their own organizations, they're still leading the effort and charges in the ways that feel true to them.
BCBSRI has had the privilege to partner with nonprofit organizations through the Blue Angel Community Health Grant Program, but mostly we're working with adults. Can you talk about what it means to be a youth-led organization first? And I think you touched on it a little bit, but can you expand on it?
Being a youth-led organization, and I think it's a really powerful thing to work on as an organization, because it really shows not only as like an organization, but to teach that individual that you as a young person, you are just as equally as powerful and capable, and sometimes even more capable than an adult, which is like a radical idea. But I think it's something to push for, because it pushes confidence into people.
It also teaches you skills that you would need for in life, like leadership skills and communication skills and patience.
The idea of having like youth as leaders personally has made me understand my power and the power I hold in my voice and my opinions. Because literally the other day I was with my supervisor and we were talking about an event that was coming up, and I was just like, hey, I just wanted to remind you, don't forget this. And she was like, yeah, totally, that's cool. And I just kind of reflected. I was like, I would have never been able to tell an adult, I just wanted to remind you to do this. You know what I mean?
This is what it's about. Because it's just transferable thing, and it's the adult's responsibility to hold that space and make that happen. And it's not about it's acknowledging that we as adults have experience, but there's a difference between being an authoritative figure and eldering and mentoring. And that's what we try to do, and we're not perfect about it. And that's why it's important to have those moments where Ramat will tell her team leader, don't forget this, you got to do this. Have the board chair tell me, no, that we cannot do that. Have the youth tell the programming adult team, this isn't going to work. We have to look at it this way or else this is just not going to fly. It's beautiful work. It challenges a lot of things and conceptions that we have and that we're socialized to do. But when it's done right, which is authentically, it's transformative.
It's also really cool. There's not a lot of spaces like this. And like when I tell people like, oh yeah, I have to go to work. And they're like, oh, what do you do at work? And I tell them what I do. They're like, are you being paid for that? Like, what do you do? Do you? And it's like all these questions like you as a youth are doing that job. Like, are you doing it for free? What's the catch? Like, why? And I'm like, no. I'm doing this job and I'm getting paid like, you know, any other person would, and I'm learning from it. And so like, I think that's really cool that we're given that opportunity to learn and to be given the same chance an adult would.
That reminds me of something really important that I want to name, in that one of our belief systems, which was also leads to our success, is that we believe in equitable compensation. So something that happens in the larger scheme of the world is folks from marginalized communities and identities, especially Black, Indigenous, and people of color, are asked to come and give their opinion and do things all the time and aren't always compensated. So we work really hard to create equitable compensation for all of our people here at Youth in Action, from the team to the youth. So that means we see youth as very important consultants, and they have been hired as equity consultants on citywide projects before, and we do that here. So if there's a young person who's going to be coming in and speaking, a young person leading a project, a young person giving an opinion, we're going to pay them, and we're going to give them those rates. We're going to pay them as if anyone else we're bringing in as a specialist, because they are specialists. They're a very unique voice. And in a lot of ways, being a young person, you're marginalized because there's a social belief that you can't make your own decisions or know what you need is best for you. So we don't want to exploit young people, so we pay them.
So Youth in Action was one of the first grantees through the Blue Angel Community Health Grant Program. On a recent episode of this podcast, Linda Newton, former VP of Community Relations and Corporate Social Responsibility, at Blue Cross and Blue Shield of Rhode Island, and Diversity, who launched the program, talked about how the review committee was so impressed by the original grant application that they decided to come and visit, and she was blown away. So, listen, can you talk about Youth in Action programs that have come to life off the page?
I've seen a lot of the programs that have came through these doors. Like, we used to have a language justice group where we focused on getting, I think, like, standing up, being advocates for people who maybe took, like, ELA or, like, had English as their second language. We also had outdoor equity, and that was based on, like, getting youth, specifically people of color, outside, because when you live in the city, you're not really exposed to things like hiking, to camping, and those are amazing and beautiful experiences, so I think it's important to give people of color a chance to do that. And also, we had, before it was YIB, it was Ending Youth Homelessness, and I was one of the first new people to join that group, and I think it was also really powerful because our focus was, at least in the beginning, this is what I remember, getting resources and spreading awareness on youth homelessness to make sure that they were also equally advocated for. And right now we have podcast and fashion. So fashion, our main goal right now is to host a fashion show at Bloom and really just give creative youth a chance to be creative, because often we aren't given a chance to be creative, so we need a space where that's supported.
Right now, podcasting is in a process of interviews about the problems in school and how we could get our voice heard.
And for Bloom, we're trying to record all the podcasts that we do and like make a montage at it, because the Bloom project can't be long, and we're just going to do like public interviews to get people's opinion about school problems in the community. And interview teachers, interview kids.
I think one thing I'll add really quickly is we did highlight a lot of the different programs and things that are happening when we were previously talking about collective programming. So there's a lot of stuff there. But I think something I want to lift off the page a little bit more that we haven't talked a lot about is that Youth in Action, we do a lot of outdoor excursion type stuff, whether it's going on hikes or going. We do two wilderness retreats. We do one in the summer. And then where there's a lot of camping, and then we do one in the winter where we're retreating in a cabin. And it's hard to explain what happens there in terms of like the level of connection of intergenerational like healing and growth. We have a lot of fun. We have a lot of deep conversation. We have a lot of opportunity to really create the essential connections to be able to work together as an intergenerational collective of people serving themselves, their communities, their families, and everything around. It's a really beautiful aspect of our agency. And the outdoors component in that connection piece is, again, another legacy of the health work that started here 20, 25 years ago. It's really focusing on the interpersonal and the social emotional health. And that's just been a transformative thing. It's always been here, but there's just a deeper focus and a deeper lens on it these days.
Also, just give it a chance. I did not want to go on the retreats. I did not want to go on the hikes, but I did it. I loved it.
The youth that you served 20 years ago during that initial grant are obviously, that was 20 years ago, so they're grown up now. How has Youth in Action evolved to serve the evolving needs of the youth of Rhode Island in the area?
One of the things that I always say when I talk about Youth in Action is I didn't have Youth in Action growing up, but I'm glad that I have Youth in Action today. And, you know, it's one of those things where as someone in their 30s who would have been a young person at Youth in Action 20 years ago when we initially got this grant, I see how it serves. I see what was missing for me. And it's you know, we've talked about this a lot too, where what we do today is we don't make decisions in silos. Every decision we make about our programming, about our funding, about what we're doing is in conjunction with our young people. Our young people are part of the decision-making table. They're part of the discussions. We create systems for young people to hear opportunities, talk about it, see it, lift up opportunities they want to do, and then ask for the support of the adults to make it happen. So what keeps us current and keeps us serving the young people the way they need to be served, no matter if it's 97, 2002, or 2023, is having young people not just at the table, but at the head of it, leading it.
I think, I mean, none of us were here to speak on programming 20 years ago, like with firsthand experience. But I think like the most secondhand that I'll get is my former co-chair. Her name is Micaela Laracuente, and she used to be a participant at Youth in Action before she became the co-chair. And she, I think it really changed her life. Like, I think it may have grown her as a leader, and I think she very much loves Youth in Action. So I think it was powerful back in her day too.
Like what Elliot was saying, that asking the youth what help they need, and even like non-stereotypical leadership position, like for example, I don't know, someone that's not in the forefront, but they're still a leader in their own way. Like, and we ask them like, oh, like what is something that you're struggling with and you need help with? What is something that you feel like your mates are struggling with and they need help with? And like, it's even down to the grant. How do y'all want to use this grant? Do you want us to apply for this grant? Is it something that you find helpful? You know what I mean? So they're like 100% involved in the whole process. And it's like, we're not over here getting grants just to have money. We're getting grants that like the youth are saying that we need this.
What's the best way for people out there to help? What action do you want people to take on behalf of Youth in Action?
If you ever do actually want to donate to Youth in Action, go to the Youth in Action website. There's a donate button, so click the 500000 button.
Yeah,
we're fun.
And like, there's so many ways to donate. Like, you don't have to donate money. You could donate your time, your energy, like whatever you have.
Anything will take it. Mm-hmm. Just you. Come as you are.
Share your knowledge.
Yeah, and I think the only thing that I want to add is come celebrate with us. On Friday, June 2nd, we are having our annual Bloom celebration, which is our end of year celebration, fundraiser, and general friendraiser, where you get to celebrate with our young people and see how their work is blooming, what's coming up, and what they've been working on over the last year, and how some of the longer work is evolving, and some of the new work is closing out for the year and what's next. But for real, amplifying the voices of the young people and the work that they're doing is critical and imperative. They're not tokenized. They're out here. They are leaders in their own right, and they're leading the way for themselves and for all of us. So when you see their work, amplify what they're saying, ask the questions. No need to be over judgmental or critical. And yes, you know, amplifying what they said, the dollars and the resources are extremely helpful. Because this work isn't cheap,
And that support is really imperative. The trust-based philanthropy, the trust-based funding, and the trust-based partnerships are critical to the success of the young people over the last 25 years and for the next 25 years that we're stepping into.
The Road to Health is a podcast presented by Blue Cross and Blue Shield of Rhode Island. It's produced and hosted by me, Mark Sheldon, and Mason Im as our sound engineer, with additional support from Yasmin Diaz. Special thanks on this episode go to Yasmin and her editing talents. For more information about Youth in Action, check this episode's show notes. Be healthy, be well, and keep your eyes on the road.